All right, hi everybody, and welcome to Lecture 65 in this American History Program of History at Our House for the Junior and Senior High. As promised, today is the last lecture of new material for Test 4. So, one slight modification to our normal procedure here is that we had to dedicate yesterday and today to new material rather than review, because we have just that much important material to get through. So let me share my screen with you and show you a couple things here that are relevant to your preparations for Test 4. If we go to the junior high class webpage and you bring that up for March, you will see the two things that are significant for you. One is you will see an updated anchor fact timeline with the Reformation and religious wars. So assuming that you have now comfortably gained command, a commanding understanding of the Reformation and religious wars through our discussions and through the writing process, then the addition to this timeline of this new entry here should give you just another crucial perspective on American history. Another crucial piece of background information that will help you to understand what the different parts of American history mean. And so I've added this one here. Yeah, some of you will know this image, some of you won't. So I thought I would show it to you here on screen. It's this painting. I like to use the paintings or photographs wherever I can to illustrate things on the timelines. I think it's kind of gripping. If you've had a chance to be in the European history program, then you will recognize this painting. We studied it last year. If you haven't, I wouldn't mind giving you guys access to the History Through Art lecture for it, actually. I'm going to write myself a quick note to that effect to give you guys a bonus History Through Art lecture, so that those of you who haven't done this lecture can get a chance to do it. Okay, so I'm writing myself a note here to do that. So, because I think it's really worth it. I think this is a phenomenal painting. And I think it captures an aspect of the Reformation and religious wars that's really, it's beautifully done. It's tragic. It's sad. It's frightening. It's all of the things that the religious wars are. And so it's an event in the religious wars called St. Bartholomew's Day Massacre, in which French Catholics massacred French Calvinists. So it's a really profound image, and you can see a monk and a nun and a Catholic lord, and they all kind of have their own perspective on what is the right thing to do. And so it's really beautifully done. So if you have never seen this painting or analyzed it, you'll benefit from a bonus History Through Art lecture if you're at all interested. So that's what's down here. That's what's down here is the Reformation and religious wars symbolized by this. And on the timeline, I just put the period dates, right? I did not put all of the milestones that would be worth remembering. It's going to be part of your facts practice and part of your anchor facts practices moving forward, of which there will be more such practices and sheets in the future. The separate dates will be on there, such as on the upcoming test. But as far as the timeline is concerned, I think it's just fine to put the range of dates. So this is our most up-to-date version of the timeline. We'll be doing some additions to this. These blank spaces are going to get filled in by the time we're done with the course. And so I think it'll be a nice, really complete picture that you'll have of all of the background and all of the most crucial events in American history by the time we're done. So print this off now, and you'll have the absolute most up-to-date version of it. And then the other thing to note is, well, the junior high test preparation sheets are now online and ready to go, so as promised. So go ahead and print those off, and you've got 2 days to work on them. So good luck with that, and we'll reconvene on Thursday in order to... actually, I want to print. I want to bring that up on screen as well. Bring that up on... Oh, not the test prep. I don't want the test prep. I want the class notes to use as a prompt for today's lecture here. So as part of that test preparation, we're going to go all the way through to 1825. So we need to highlight today the most important events, most important contributions that each of the founding fathers made towards the unfolding history of the United States. And so we've already seen George Washington and John Adams. And so now we're going to follow that up with the next three founding fathers that also served as presidents. And that will be it. That will be at this week 24 class notes are the last things that you are responsible for on the upcoming test. So let's go down here. And just to set the context again, we've got George Washington, and we've got the main contribution that he made to American thinking with regard to independence. And that was, in a word, the importance of neutrality. The importance of... In fact, my favorite word to describe George Washington's policy is to use this word, kind of a twist on this word, and that is the avoidance of entanglements. That's how George Washington would have phrased it. That's also a phrase that Thomas Jefferson used, the avoidance of entanglements in other people's affairs. I don't know if this is true, but I'm reading on the news that American military advisors are being deployed in Ukraine as we speak. That makes me shudder. That's the definition of an entanglement. And American forces are busily working in places like Syria at the same time and are entangled in the affairs of many people all around the world. In fact, the United States has deployed military advisors and or special forces to over 130 countries in the world. So that's the definition of entanglement. And it's quite kind of daunting and scary to think about the fact that this is a complete repudiation of what George Washington said. So in other words, America's first and most important president advised us to behave in a certain way, and America no longer follows his advice. So Washington is saying that America should avoid entanglements for a very specific reason, that it's crucial. The most important value for America is independence. So that I just wanted to bring up with you guys and just talk over. What do you think of this concept? What is independence? And what do you think the significance of it is, especially for a country like the United States? Well, let's start with the basics. What is independence? When you hear that, what's your context? What does that word mean for you? OK. Okay, Priya, go ahead.
It means freedom to be and do as you wish.
Okay, interesting. No, it does not. So you're in the ballpark, because independence is not a political concept. Now, freedom is a political concept. To be free means that, okay, as you said, nobody can force you to act in a certain way. But independence is a more personal virtue than that. Now, it does apply to countries, which is why it's here, okay? But independence is what you would call a virtue. So what does it mean, Alexander?
So as far as I can see, it means two things. First of all, that nobody else can tell you what to do. And second of all, that you don't have to rely on other people to survive.
Okay, so now we're getting closer. Whether or not other people can tell you what to do, that's a little bit like what Bria was saying about the issue of the use of force or people being able to force you to act in a certain way and whether or not you're free to or not. I think by extension, that's relevant. But the other thing was, what was the second one?
That you don't have to rely on other people.
Not having to rely on others. Okay, that's a little bit of a negative formulation I'm looking for, because independence is not a denial of the value of others. That would be a mistake. That would be a second-handed way of looking at the virtue of independence. Let's have a positive statement of what it means to be independent. Timothy, can you tackle that?
Being independent simply means to not be dependent on anything.
Well, okay, so yes, we have these two opposing concepts, dependent and independent. All right, but I'm still looking for, and that's useful, Timothy. I appreciate that one. Independent versus dependent. Okay, but again, I'm still looking for a positive statement. What does it mean to be independent? You guys are at a stage in your lives where you're preparing to be independent. Once you get there, what is that going to mean about you? Keen, go ahead.
I'm not sure that this is quite the right word, but what comes to mind is self-reliance.
Okay, yes, I agree. You're getting close. You're relying on yourself. All right, so I'm going to put that in not too highfalutin terms here. It means being able to stand on your own two feet. It means facing the world and doing your own thinking, valuing, and acting in the world. To be an independent person, that's what it means. It means to be able to think for yourself. To be able to define your own values and to be able to go out into the world and achieve them. That's independence. You and the world without anybody else there taking care of you. This was the part that was Timothy's point about dependence versus independent. You guys are at a transitional stage right now in your lives. In some regards, certainly, of course, you guys are independent. And in some regards, you are not. So what do you think? What are some good ways to expand on this here? Think about this. In what ways are you independent? In what ways are you dependent? Give me an example of each. Or pick one you want and give me an example. Tell me a way in which you are independent or dependent. Pick. Keen, go ahead.
I am dependent on my parents to drive me where I want to go because I don't have a full driver's license.
Okay, there you go. So you guys are dependent on your parents for transportation because you have to earn your right to be a full-fledged independent driver. Perfect. Okay, Alexander, what about you?
We're also dependent on our parents for money. Our parents are the ones working that have to get all the money to buy the food and all of that.
Okay, perfect. So you are financially dependent on your parents. Okay. What about independence? Aren't you guys independent yet in some ways? What would you say? In what ways are you independent? Bria?
I can go to the store by myself.
Okay, there you go. So you walk to the store or ride your bike to the store. There's so many different things that you can do that you don't require permission for, Right? So you go into your room and you dress yourself, don't you? Right? You're independent in terms of your fashion sense, I'm sure, and in terms of the choices you make and what you get dressed. I'm sure you independently brush your teeth and so on, right? There's plenty of stuff you do without having other people do it for you. Timothy, go ahead.
I'm independent from I can stay home alone for a few hours.
There you go. Right, exactly. So the younger you are as a child, you need a babysitter. So you've achieved that degree of independence where you don't need to rely on a grown-up to take care of you in that context. Good. That's a really good transitional example. I'll give you guys another transitional example. You guys are dependent in your studies of history. You're not yet ready. I'll tell you flat out, just in case you were wondering. You're not yet ready to learn history on your own. And so you need the assistance of a professional to guide you through the complexities of the past in order for you to acquire a sufficient context of knowledge that will allow you to proceed independently in the future. At some point, if you succeed in your studies with guidance, you will be independent with regard to the past. And definitely everything that we're doing here this year is a prerequisite. So, but you are still dependent. All right, so how does this translate across to into the context of countries? A country being independent is like a person in being independent. It means that that country stands on its own in the world, on its own merits, based on the thinking of its people and the leadership of its presidents or leaders, as they may be, and acts in the world based on its own judgment. That's independence on the level of countries. Very similar to independence as far as individuals are concerned. While the American colonies were colonies, they were dependent. When they declared their independence, then that's it. They broke free of the mother country and they said, we're going to be our own country. So that really, that's definitional right there. We declare that we are going to be our own country. And they had to fight for it and prove their worth in that sense militarily. And then they had to define the Constitution and prove their worth, the Founding Fathers especially, in terms of whether or not they could in fact deliver on this promise of individual rights and define a government that actually embodied it. And they had to make the Bill of Rights to really make the final step there. And then we get to the Founding Fathers and, well, they've got to follow through. They have to seriously embody this virtue of independence as leaders. I have to say, in this kind of a world, what does it mean for the United States and to be independent? And for a country like America, here's a question for you. Why was it so important to be independent? Now again, go back to the fundamental definition. To be independent means to do your own thinking and valuing and acting in the world. To stand on your own two feet. Can you see why this, in a sense, was the fundamental virtue of America and the fundamental value to defend? Why? The most important thing. What kind of goes to what Timothy said about independent versus dependent. When you're dependent, everybody around you is shaping your world and determining things for you. Right? When you're independent, you're doing your own thinking. Wasn't that, what about that applies in the context of America? The importance of doing your own thinking. The importance of standing up for your own values. guys don't see the connection? What did America stand for? What was the what did the Declaration of Independence say? Our own independent thinking tells us that, Alexander?
That we don't want to be ruled by Britain with a corrupt monarchy and we want a republic?
Right, exactly. That we stand for individual rights. Okay, Declan, tell me all the other countries in the world that also stood for individual rights. Just give me a list of like 10 or 20. I gave you a trick question. Did you detect the trick? How many other countries in the world understood individual rights?
None.
Zero. All right, now maybe you guys can see the connection here between independence and rights. What was it? There was only one country in the world dedicated to individual rights. The entire rest of the planet didn't have a clue. So talk about the need for independence. When all of mankind is against you. That's the whole definition right there. I mean, talk about the need to be independent. The ability to stand up to the entire world and say, you're wrong. Our independent judgment is that government may only properly act to secure individual rights. And all of that stuff that you guys claim about all your monarchies and all your legitimacies and all of the things that you guys, it's all wrong. And we say so. We are the ones who think that, and we don't care what you have to say about it. We independently judge it to be so. Talk about the embodiment of the virtue of independence was the Declaration of Independence. On the level of a country asserting a set of values that was not accepted or recognized anywhere else in the world. That's independence. And so how do you do that now? How do you really be independent in a dangerous world? A world with countries like England and France and the Holy Roman Empire and Spanish Empire and all those characters. How do you do that? Well, the basic answer is George Washington's answer is don't get entangled. Or to put the matter pretty simply, stay neutral. Neutrality for independence. Do not minimize political connection. Because that is dangerous to independence and to rights. Getting entangled in other people's affairs is the surest way to get, well, their confused values all mashed up with ours and make it harder for us to stay dedicated to what it is that we stand for as opposed to all that other stuff out there. Okay, so that's George Washington. In order to be independent, gotta be neutral. Stay away from entanglements. Okay, what about John Adams? It's nice to be neutral, but does that mean other countries are going to respect you? What else do you have to be in order to be independent? What is it? What does all this add up to that you read yesterday? In order to be independent, you've got to be... Give me a word. Having a navy means what? You've got to be, Juliet?
Strong.
Strong. Right? You can't be a weakling in this world, sadly. Right? You can't afford to be weak because Napoleon doesn't care what you think independently. And sadly, nobody else does either. So if they see you as weak, they are going to prey on you. So if you want to stand for a principle as revolutionary as individual rights, you better be able to stand up for it. That's the key. So that's John Adams. And then, well, we get to Thomas Jefferson. We got to move on here to our next presidents. And we get to the certain implementation of these principles here. Thomas Jefferson was a president who was really anti-war. I mean, probably more anti-war than any other president. He even got into a lot of trouble for it. But in the end, when there was no choice except you got to stand up for Americans when you've got people attacking them, and there were pirates, literally. Sometimes I think we get the wrong idea of pirates when we're watching Disney movies. Because pirates are the real deal is very frightening. I don't know, do you guys see the movie Captain Phillips, I think it was, with Tom Hanks? That was kind of a good movie, dramatizing what a pirate is in real life, not pretend Disney movies. The pirates of North Africa were capturing Americans and selling them into slavery in Africa. And so Thomas Jefferson, there was no negotiating with these people. So he had to send the Navy and basically blast them into submission. And he did it. So this is known as the Barbary War. And I think it's an important symbol of, again, the founders' policy of defending rights and staying independent. Fight if you have to. But overall, try to stay as minimize political connection. And again, with the Louisiana Purchase, we get exactly the same situation. What happened there was, let me go ahead and bring this up on screen. Go to the Louisiana Purchase website on Wikipedia, bring up a map. This is a cool map. So when Thomas Jefferson became president, the United States was all of this stuff, not all of it yet organized as states completely, but basically everything to the east of the Mississippi. And this over here was in flux. Now, we've got the state names on here and the state boundaries on here only for the sake of just kind of getting the, making a comparison, right? But this area over here was in flux. Does anybody know who first controlled this? If you've read the notes, you probably know from whom this territory was purchased. But who had it in the first place? Timothy?
I think France had it in the first place, and then England took it and then gave it back to France. I'm not sure, but I think France had it in the first place.
Nope, Spain had it in the first place. Right, so France had all of this in the first place, and England took it, but this over here technically belonged to Spain. Yeah, there might have been some contest over exactly what the meaning of it all was. But it belonged to Spain, and then Napoleon, being the bully that he was, wrenched it out of the hands of Spain, and it was part of France. And so, like I said, it was in flux. It was kind of out of control, but it didn't really matter. When Jefferson looked across to the west of the Mississippi, what he saw was, here we have America, we want to be independent. What's that going to be like exactly if some European empire is right over here? Pick one. Who cares? France. So this is America, and this is France. How's that sound to you? Sound like a recipe for independence? Remember what George Washington said. No entanglements. Europe's over there, America's over here. Let's not get entangled. Well, this is now France. All right, so you're a farmer in the Ohio Valley. You put your crop on a barge. You go down the Ohio. Oh, and then you go down the Mississippi, huh? Yeah, go down the Mississippi. Well, who does that belong to again? Timothy, what's that? We have to restart the recipe? What do you mean?
Just making a joke
Well,
that this recipe with France and America would work as independent countries.
okay, good. Yeah, you're right. You're right. This is not a good combination of ingredients. And so Thomas Jefferson sent ambassadors to Napoleon. He said, if you want this, just keep in mind that the likelihood is that we're going to argue. And when we argue, guess who I'm going to make allies with right off the bat instantly if I'm in a disagreement with you? Just keep this in mind, Mr. Napoleon. Who? Who's the obvious choice? Sometimes you guys just don't want to answer the easy questions. Alexander?
Spain or England?
Yeah, the most powerful country in the world would be, and your old mother country. Yeah, exactly. England especially. Yeah, France, Spain maybe. But England was France's biggest headache, the most powerful country in the world. So yeah, we're gonna ally with your enemies. And so Napoleon is realizing, oh, this is not practical. He had his hands full back in Europe anyway, so he gave it up. He sold it to America, and the size of the United States basically doubled in one fell swoop by this treaty called the Louisiana Purchase. So this is Jefferson's other really key action as far as American history is concerned. Ah, I'm losing the, there we go, is the Louisiana Purchase. Taking over the Louisiana Territory from France meant that we got rid of this threat to American independence that was having France as a neighbor, which it certainly was. France got into lots of messy, messy trouble, and I think it would have been a disaster had France still possessed a colonial empire in America. Thankfully, this was avoided. So, we've got Jefferson and his contribution here on those terms. And then we get to James Madison. So, not only was James Madison the primary author of the Constitution and of the Federalist arguments to defend the Constitution, and then the author of the Bill of Rights, he's definitely trying to compete with Jefferson and Washington here for number one founding father. So not only did he do all those things, but he's president as well, starting in 1809. And well, he had the biggest headache of all, because Napoleon's wars in Europe were ongoing, and this led to a very unpleasant outcome, or a very unpleasant result in the meantime. And that was that the British Navy, desperate to defend England from Napoleon, was practicing a form of slavery, and which was, I love this word, euphemistically known as impressments. And so it's a very strange term. It kind of conjures the idea of being impressed, but the verb actually is to be pressed. So that's kind of important to get. And so what the British Navy would do to its own citizens and to anybody that claimed to be American, but whom they deemed in their own way to be British, they would kidnap them and press them into service. Meaning, I mean, nowadays in modern times, we have a term for this as well, which should be something that will very much interest you, if you are going to be soon be an adult and you're at all concerned about your personal freedom. When people were your age and it was the 1960s, the American government also did this very perversely. Does anybody know what it is when you are forced into military service? and forced to go off to fight a war? What's that called? Keen?
Conscription.
Conscription or the draft? Yes, exactly. Military conscription, the draft. So the United States has had that previously, and there continue to be advocates of it in American politics, so you should pay attention to what they have to say and who they are. And because basically they're advocating the very same thing that America once went to war against in the War of 1812. Madison was faced with the world's most powerful military, the British Navy, and the fact that it was enslaving Americans, and this was never going to be an easy choice. And he decided that he needed to stand up for Americans. So, and this was not going to be like the American Revolution. The American Revolution, the United States wins in a sense, but it was because the British were trying to win a land war for control of the colonies. The War of 1812 was very different. The British weren't interested in occupying America. They were just going to have, I won't say fun, but they were just going to punish Americans militarily for the effrontery of being against Britain. And the most symbolic episode, I think, of the War of 1812 was when a British fleet sailed up to Washington, which you can do from the sea, up Chesapeake Bay, and they destroyed the new capital city of Washington, burned it to the ground. And they were trying to do the same thing to Baltimore, which is not far from Washington. But there was a fort there called Fort McHenry that withstood their bombardment. And as a result, they weren't able to do it. And there was an American prisoner on board the British ship whose name was Francis Scott Key. And he was so inspired by the battle that he wrote a poem, which is now the American anthem. So if you want to do a cool unit study that's relevant to American history and you want to understand the lyrics to the American National Anthem, which I hope you know, that would be a good one. A good project. To study the lyrics, to study the words of the Star Spangled Banner and to think about what was going on. Learn the story of what is behind the words. And how appropriate they are. So, it was a hard-fought war, and in no sense did America win that war, but it ended because Napoleon was done in Europe in 1815. So that was a tough one. The president had to decide to stand up for Americans, even though the price was going to be quite terrible, to show the world that basically to be independent means you got to be willing to stand on your own, even in the face. And this is where you really need courage and integrity, even in the face of the strongest bully there is. That's the hard part. Right? Having principles in good times and when things are easy, that's not such a big deal. Having principles matters when it's hard. Right? When it's going to cost you. When it's going to be difficult to stay true to what you stand for. So Madison was able to do that. And that takes us finally to James Monroe, who was the youngest of the founding fathers. And my personal favorite, other than Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, Patrick Henry, James Madison. All right, so he's up there in the top five, top 10 for sure. James Monroe is my, I'm going to say my sentimental favorite, other than Patrick Henry, because he was an officer in the colonial militia in the time of George Washington's. Now let me see here. I'm going to try to take us all the way through. Oh, I lost it. I'm just going to. In the time of George Washington's crossing of the Delaware, and In fact, he's in the painting that we saw, which is a really fun thing to be able to detect. So if I bring it back up and show you the painting of Leutze and the crossing of the Delaware, it might not immediately be obvious. But keep in mind, Leutze is painting this a long time afterwards. He knows the Founding Fathers. He knows the story. He knows that James Monroe was one of the heroes of the Battle of Trenton. And he later becomes president. So where do you think he put him in the painting? As a young officer making the crossing. Timothy?
I think he's the guy, he's like the top guy that's carrying the flag.
Yeah, indeed. And I've always believed it, like with a kind of emotional certainty that he was the guy. And I always wondered, well, I wish it would have been a little bit more conclusive, even though he always will be this character to me. But because of this high-resolution reproduction, I'm more convinced than ever. Watch this. If we zoom in on James Monroe, what do you see here in the painting? Classic differentiating feature of his facial physiognomy, right? The chin dimple. It's right there. You can see it. This is James Monroe. So that's just fun, right down to the dimple. What's so interesting about James Monroe? Not just that he was an officer in Washington's assault on Trenton, the crossing of the Delaware, and everything. Even though he was, and he later became president, he became the fifth president. And the thing about James Monroe that stands out in history is that he gave the final expression of this policy of the Founding Fathers that became the defining statement of Americanism for 100 years. For about 100 years, America lived by a certain set of rules. And it was the Monroe Doctrine. And it was basically the same thing that Washington had said, that Adams believed in, that Jefferson and Madison had all agreed to. But in 1823, under special circumstances, he issued his own declaration, and it's known henceforth as the Monroe Doctrine. So make sure you read up on this, because it's the last component of the founding era. And the key to it is that the United States should stay disconnected from European affairs. Same thing that Washington had said, except restated for a new context, new situation, more kind of universal. That the United States had a really important difference. It was very different in an essential way from Europe, and therefore, to be independent should stay out of European affairs. And because that was so important to America, America warned, he issued a warning to Europe and said, stay out of our business. So both at the same time. Kind of both at the same time. Stay out of our business and we'll stay out of yours. So that's gonna be huge for American history. Because as we'll see, for the first half of American history, this is the way that America acted. This was the principle. And then in the second half, it completely reversed course. Complete switch. Could not be more opposite today than what the Founding Fathers advised. So America is a strange place. It is a country that has a very contradictory legacy in many different ways. And this is one of the most important challenges in figuring out what America is and what it has become, and kind of sorting out in your own mind what it all amounts to. So definitely present-centric. Very, very, the Monroe Doctrine is, all of this stuff is hugely present-centric because it is, the Founding Fathers' legacy is the legacy of independence in the name of rights. Okay, folks, that'll do it. You've got your test prep, you've got your notes, you've got everything you need, I hope. So good luck with the test prep. We'll get back to it in 2 days' time. Tomorrow, of course, we do history through art. Thank you. Talk to you tomorrow.
Bye, Mr. Powell.
All right. Bye-bye.